Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by Jack Kane Ford. Find your next Ford Tough vehicle at caneford.com. Woodhill Community Center. Have a hand in the heart of the city. Support their mission with your donations at woodhillcommunitycenter.org. Toyota in Nicholasville Superstore. Online consultants are standing by right now to help you find your next Toyota. Visit Toyota on Nicholasville.com. Lexus of Lexington, home of the best-selling Lexus IS. Find yours today at LexusofLexington.com. Did you know that half of America is single? Hollywood has never produced anything like this before. The Dating Project, a groundbreaking documentary that follows five single people, ages 18 to 40, as they search for authentic and meaningful relationships. There is no script. There are no actors. These are real people trying to find love and happiness in an age of swiping left or right. From Empower Pictures, Paulus Productions, Family Theater Productions, and PureFlix, you can now own The Dating Project. Save the date by visiting thedatingprojectmovie.com and go a step further and help others in your circle date differently by partnering with Ascension Press. Visit shop.ascensionpress.com to acquire the companion study guide. The Dating Project Movie is now available on DVD and digital download on Amazon, iTunes, and Walmart. Please visit thedatingprojectmovie.com for details.
This is Setting the Record Straight with Chuck Coughlin. How you doing again?
And of course, this is Breadbox Media. Breadboxmedia.com.
Got an interesting subject we're going to set the record straight on today. It's the matter of Pope Joan, the infamous myth of Pope Joan, the female pope. There's been a lot of attempts to give this myth credence. Truly some masterful and arduous work was done to create this myth. Since 1970, the public has been treated to a lot of renditions of the slander against our beloved and magnificent Catholic Church. To several books, a radio drama, a London stage play, all asserting that at one time a woman reigned as Pope. A full-length film in 1972, entitled Pope Joan, also presented her as its central character. This film, when shown in America, was called The Devil's Imposter. This is no amateur effort, no independent studio effort. This is a major studio, major stars, directors, screenwriters. No effort was spared to create this demeaning film. It starred no less than the great star of the Swedish film industry, Liv Ullmann, star of so many of the Ingmar Bergman films, practically all of them. Liv Ullmann as Pope Joan. Other stars filled the roles. It was a Columbia Pictures production. There was Leslie Ann Down as Cecilia, Trevor Howard as Pope Leo, Jeremy Kemp as Joan's father, Patrick McGee, a great actor of film and some very popular TV series, as Elder Monk, Franco Nero as Louis, Maximilian Schell as Brother Adrian, and other stars. These are great movie stars all. The poster for the film had this legend, a daughter of the devil and the son of Charlemagne, the incredible adventures of a girl who masqueraded as a man, but lusted as a woman. So, that's the film. As the Wikipedia says about the film, even though modern consensus generally disputes Pope Joan as legendary, in this film she's treated as fact. There was additional choral music provided by the Sistine Chapel Choir. I can't imagine how they got their cooperation. It was released as The Devil's Imposter, with much material cut. It has recently been re-edited with previously unreleased footage to make a whole new film called She Who Would Be Pope. It stars Liv Ullmann as Pope Joan, Olivia de Havilland as Mother Superior. These are some great stars. Now, there was another one, a 2009 film, Pope Joan, is a German, British, and Italian and Spanish medieval epic film based on the American novelist Donna Woodfall Cross's book of the same name. It stars Joanna Wolkelek as Pope Joan and no less than John Goodman as Pope Sergius. In this case, Joan is the daughter of a village priest. This last film was nominated in four categories in the 2010 Deutsche Filmpreis Best Supporting Actress for Joris Triebel. So when I say that there's been an effort of disinformation, that there has been expert anti-Catholic propaganda, I'm not talking about some radical group on the fringe presenting this portraiture of our Catholic Church. I'm not talking about some provincial media forces. I'm talking about major media warfare on the Catholic Church in this case. Although there's a long history for this Pope Joan legend, it is completely fictitious. I'll state it again, and I'm going to show you a bit of detail why this is so. It is completely fictitious. But the attempts to produce this disinformation have gone on for centuries. They're not only recent. The basic account upon which the story is based is ascribed to Martin Polonus, who is a reputable Dominican historian who lived in the 13th century. I'm going to read to you a translation, a part of Martin Polonus' account of this legend. Here we go. He refers to Pope Leo IV. After the aforesaid Leo, John, an Englishman by descent, Johannes Anglicus, who came from Mainz, held the see for 2 years, 5 months, and 4 days, and the pontificate was vacant 1 month. He died at Rome. He, it is asserted, was a woman, and having been in youth taken by her lover to Athens in man's clothes, she made such progress in various sciences that there was nobody equal to her, so that afterward lecturing on the Trivium in Rome, she had great masters for her disciples and hearers, and forasmuch as she was in great esteem in the city for both her life and her learning, she was unanimously elected pope. But while pope, she became pregnant by the person with whom she was intimate. Not knowing the time of her delivery, while going from St. Peter's to the Lateran, being taken in labor, she brought forth a child between the Colosseum and St. Clement's Church. And afterwards dying, she was, it is said, buried in that place. And because the Lord, Pope, always turns aside from that way, there are some who are fully persuaded that it is done in detestation of the fact. Nor is she put in the catalogue of the holy popes, as well on account of her female sex as on account of the foul nature of the transaction. In another translation, John, an Englishman by descent, is rendered as John Angelicus, with the second word being treated as a surname. Those who have promoted the story of a female pope have also pointed to the writings of other reputable chroniclers, Roman customs, and the acceptance of the story by later popes. Now, what are the facts? So now we will set the record straight on these facts. They're not facts.
You know what this is? It's what we call today fake news. Never liked that term a lot. The term fake news sort of replaced the old factoids, which held for about 10 years. I like that, factoids. Okay, fake news if you like. Fake old news. There was a real man who was Pope from 847 to 855. Pope Leo IV, very well documented. We have his writings, referred to in many contemporary documents. His existence is well known. He was Pope from 847 to 855 Anno Domini.
From 847 till June 17th, 855. The coronation of Benedict III took place on the 29th of September of the same year, and he lived till 858. So there is no room for a John Angelicus, John English, to have reigned for 2.5 years between them. This period of history is well documented, and the succession of Benedict III within a few months of Leo's death is well attested. But I want to comment that a pope is a very public figure. seeing many people in hearings day after day, and so there's many written accounts. There must be dozens of revealing documents, if not hundreds, about those two popes during this period. A little later, I'm going to cite some of these documents that attest to the fact that there was no room for a John Angelicus, Pope Joan, to have reigned for 2.5 years between Pope Leo IV and Benedict III. Here's a few examples of the documentation of what was going on in the papacy at the period. First, representatives were sent by the Bishop of Reims in 855 with documents to Leo IV. While on their way, they heard of Leo's death and on arrival in Rome, learned of Benedict's election. This indicates a short period between Leo's death and Benedict's election. Next, once Benedict was elected, the approval of King Lothair the Gaul was required before the coronation could proceed. The emperor was dying, so his approval was not received quickly. Anastasius, a priest who had been condemned by Pope Leo IV for neglecting his duties, used this delay to imprison Benedict and take possession of the papal throne. There was an uproar among the people, and within a few weeks, the imperial envoy recognized Benedict III. Anastasius was overthrown, and the coronation of Benedict followed on September 29th of the same year. In the reports of this controversy, there is no mention of a woman posing as pope. Given these dramatic events, the imprisoning of a pope by someone who became a false pope, and it is not even hinted at or mentioned in the abundant documents of this historical period, it is simply incredible. It is beyond any believability to think that they would not mention that there was an intervening pope who was a female who gave birth in public. Next, the artful liar, Anastasius, who had been at the center of the dispute, later wrote a book in which he records that there was less than 3 months between Leo and Benedict. So Anastasius made no mention in a later document of an intervening pope. This omission is incredible from a man who helped originate the legend. Next, the Emperor Lothar died the day before Benedict was crowned, but it took some time for this news to reach Rome. So the commemorative coins of the coronation named Lothar as emperor on one side and Benedict as pope on the other. As Emperor Lothar died in 855, this again indicates that Benedict became pope in that same year. Next fact. A decretal issued by Pope Benedict III for the monastery Corbi is dated October 7, 855. Next, Pope Nicholas I, who reigned from 858 to 867, mentioned on several occasions that he succeeded Benedict III, who had succeeded Leo IV. Next fact. During Benedict's reign, a dispute occurred as to whether Photius or Ignatius should be Patriarch of Constantinople. So we were having a dispute between two individuals over who would occupy the chair of the Patriarch in Constantinople. Pope Nicholas I sent legates to adjudicate. They supported Photius, but Pope Nicholas disavowed them, declaring for Ignatius as patriarch. Photius had lost out. He struck back. Photius replied by writing serious but polemical anti-Roman works. If a woman pope had reigned less than 2 years previously, he would not have ignored this scandal, too delicious. Yet he clearly accepted that Benedict III followed Leo IV. Next, I want to note that English chroniclers paid special attention to Pope Leo IV. The reason for that attention from English chroniclers is that when Alfred the Great was a small boy, he was taken to Rome by King Aethelwulf, his father. While there, Alfred received the sacrament of confirmation from Leo IV himself. If John Angelicus was there at the time,
remember, John Angelicus is a name for Pope Joan.
If John Angelicus was there at the time, and a distinguished Englishman of English descent, as he is alleged to have been, and was at the center of church affairs, King Aethelwulf
and his retinue certainly would have met him. They would have had to meet him to arrange the ceremony.
Yet the English chroniclers, always interested in reporting the fame of those connected with their own race, make no mention of him. They made no mention of a pope whose name was John the Englishman, John Angelicus, who was later revealed to be a woman, who died giving birth while being carried in a livery across Rome. Now, does that strain your credibility? Do you still believe in this tall tale about Pope John? It runs contrary to all good sense.
Two more items. The first is, in 1020, Pope Leo IX accused the Church at Constantinople of permitting abuses. As an example, he said that by permitting a eunuch to be a patriarch,
that Constantinople could have very well had a woman patriarch at one time.
Leo would not have chosen such an argument if 165 years earlier there had been a woman pope. It was also noteworthy that Constantinople did not refer to this alleged incident in its reply. And last, not one contemporary chronicler, nor one letter written anywhere in Rome or Europe, mentioned a pope who had given birth in public.
Not one. For years afterward, not one.
Yet this certainly would have been the news story of the age. Nobody mentioned it. Now we come to the matter
of what we will call the interpolation.
All right, you ready for this? The interpolation. The first mention of John Angelicus appeared more than 400 years after his reign, so-called. 400 years after the reign of the supposed John Angelicus Pope Joan was the first mention of any document.
Of Pope Joan's existence. 400 years. No mention.
Martin von Trappau, usually known as Martin Polonius, that I mentioned earlier, but he was called Martin Polonius because he was from Poland. This man named Martin became papal chaplain. While in Rome, he took advantage of being close to the Vatican archives to write a history of the popes. His book recorded Benedict III following Leo IV in the usual manner. Although the earliest editions of his book give no hint of a female pope, guess what? Those published a few years later contain the story about Pope Joan, just as we told above. It can be seen to have been squeezed into the margin and added to the foot of a page of the manuscript. It was the manuscripts containing this interpolation. This is the interpolation. It's these manuscripts containing that interpolation in the margins that were copied and spread throughout the known world. Oh, so the practice of disinformation did not begin with the Soviet Union. They may be past masters at it, but they were really expert
disinformers operating at a high level
in the 13th century. Martin's position as papal chaplain gave his book a semi-official status within the Catholic world. It became the authoritative history of the popes and was used in all teaching establishments. So now the lie spreads. You know the old saying, a lie goes 1,000 miles before the truth gets its boots on. This is a case of that. Now, under normal circumstances, someone with access to Vatican archives would no doubt have challenged the story during the following years. Why didn't it happen? Well, circumstances were far from normal. What was going on in the outer world was chaos. As soon as Polonius finished writing in about 1275, he left Rome for Polani and died on the journey. In 1303, a French army occupied Rome and seized the Pope and captured him. The short reign of his successor was followed by a year in which the papal chair was vacant due to French interference. Eventually, the French put such pressure on that one of his countrymen, Clement V, was elected
Pope. He was elected Pope.
This is 1305, but he never left his native land. He didn't go to Rome. This is called a papal captivity. This papal captivity in France of the popes lasted until 1367. How long is that? Okay, 62 years. 62 years this papal captivity lasted. What ended it is Pope Urban V visited Rome for 3 years. As it was controlled by outlaws, he retreated to France.
A permanent return to Rome was not achieved until 1377, 10 years later after Pope Urban's visit. During these 72 years of exile, the Black Death devastated the peoples of Europe. You catch that? The chaos is from the Black Death. In an attempt to staff the parishes and monasteries, men of less than normal abilities were admitted to the priesthood. The standard of education fell, and there was little time for research. Anyone that knows a little bit about Western European history knows about this dark period. By 1377, the year of the Pope's return to Rome, all Europe, including the Pope, believed this interpolation to be true history. This was not a time of educated men or careful scholarship. There was rampant believing in superstitions, much like today. We are living, of course, in our new dark age, a darker age. Even after the return to Rome, social unrest was not conducive to quiet study for some years to come. Yeah, now here's where the enemies of the church went to a lot of laborious trouble to keep constructing the lie. And they had the added advantage of a very gullible public in a time of ignorance. Now take note of what comes next. Those people who assert that Pope Joan existed have pointed to chronicles predating Martin Polonus, which allude to her. How could that be? There's a list of these chroniclers with their very colorful European names. The main ones are, forgive me these pronunciations or mispronunciations, Liber Pontificalis by Anastasius, 9th century. Historiography by Marianus Scotus of 1083. The Chronography of Siegbert of Glenbortz, which was around 1112. You think it's fun to say these words? Maybe it is, I don't know. A History of the Popes by Bishop Otto of Frisingen. A History by Richard of Poitiers. The Pantheon by Gottfried of Viterbo, about 1186, and a history by Gervase of Tibury in 1214. So this list of mispronounced names of chroniclers or historians spans a period of from the 800s all the way to 1214. Here's the problem with these references, supposed references, to Pope Joan in these ancient documents. In all these cases, the earliest manuscripts of these works fail to mention a woman pope. It is in editions produced some time after 1275 that references to Pope Joan appear. Close examination shows that when these books were republished, after that date, the opportunity was taken to add the additional information to be found in Polonius's work. In several instances, a note was added stating that the additional material was, quote, according to Polonius, unquote. So, although these chronicles were first written at times prior to Polonius, they do not provide any independent evidence of a female pope. Are you starting to see what's going on here? We have a lot of evidence in the matter of Pope Joan. But the evidence all goes against the validity of there being a Pope Joan. There's no valid historical evidence of her existence. But there's a lot of evidence in this matter. There's evidence of fraud. Listen on. Basically, she wasn't in the original documents, only those added much later. Now, let's think about some of the customs related to the Pope. Following the return of the papacy to Rome, 1377, the flow of business visitors, tourists, and pilgrims increased greatly. A tourist guide, Mirabile Urbis Romae, was published, which not only repeated the accepted history of John Angelicus,
Pope Joan,
but added ideas of its own. Visitors wanted to see the place of, quote, the birth. So very soon an inscribed memorial appeared. A statue was erected, or an earlier one designated, to sit alongside the road.
These probably satisfied the tourist trade, but there's no evidence for their existence prior to 1378. They're more recent.
So we've been discussing about how there is a lot of evidence in the matter of the female pope, Pope Joan, who evidently, according to legend, had an outwardly male identity as John the Englishman, John Angelicus. Yes, there's a lot of evidence. There is a lot of evidence
that the story was a fraudulent story, invented by experts in disinformation who were opponents of the Catholic Church, were anti-Catholic, or had grievances against current popes. And we've seen that there was no documentary evidence for the existence of a Pope Joan from the time that it was supposed to have existed until 400 years after. Then it started to appear, not in current documents of the time only, but in previous documents which had been altered when copied to include this story, this legend about a mythical Pope Joan. So it goes. That's how it goes. A lie goes 1,000 miles before the truth gets its boots on. Because of the accusation of misogyny against the Catholic Church, of suppressing women. When actually, the Catholic Church has done more to raise the status of women than any other entity in history. So back to Pope Joan. We were talking about that path that Pope Joan supposedly had taken on her trip across Rome when she gave birth midway, and there was a false claim that it was a path later avoided by other popes. And the suspicion is because of the reason of this supposed birth. Well, what's the truth about that? Now, it was traditional for the pope to travel, when in procession from his palace to the Lateran, not along the direct road but by a longer route. This tradition appears to have become established long before 1275, when Pope Joan was supposed to have given birth along the way. It is unlikely that the author of the interpolation would have referred to an event which his contemporaries would have known was untrue. This route continued to be used until near the close of the 16th century. It was the interpolation in Polonius' work that introduced the notion of the detour being made in order to show abhorrence of the street in which the Pope supposedly gave birth. But after the papal return to Rome in 1377, this reason was accepted as part of the John Angelicus story. In 1486, the Pope deliberately took the shorter route in order to destroy this superstition. So the lie originated once again in the interpolation that we discussed. The generally accepted opinion today is that the direct route was narrow and could be used only with difficulty. It's also possible that it would have disrupted traders, as the Pope had to travel frequently to and from the Lateran. In 1590, the road was widened and thereafter used for the procession. Now, an impressive marble throne, among other museum pieces, was kept at the Vatican. This throne had a hole in the seat and may have originally been used in Roman baths. A rumor spread that it was used at papal consecrations in order that the Pope's sex might be checked out during the ceremony, so as to avoid a repeat of the scandalous early era. For such a procedure is not mentioned in the Ordo Romanus, which contained directions for the consecration ceremonial. And it's worth saying there's a doctrinal problem with this whole story. One reason that no one was in a hurry to challenge the story was that it did not impinge upon doctrine. It is the Bishop of Rome who assumes the authority of the Pope, as the Church considers that the Mother Church does not possess the power to consecrate a woman as priest or bishop, or any ceremony of consecration involving a woman would have no effect. It would be null. All the chroniclers therefore treated her as not being a real pope and considered that the See of Rome was vacant during her years of alleged imposture. An argument used by John Huss of the Hussites at the Council of Constance in 1415 was that when the church was without a pope while the impostor was sitting in the papal chair, the Church of Christ did not cease to function. His opponents did not challenge the historical accuracy of his statement, but denied that the circumstances had a doctrinal significance. So what they were saying to John Huss is, even if what you allege is true, that it's still impossible. The matter has been decided above our pay grade. Jesus Christ himself did not create female bishops.
So let's say farewell to the legend, the myth, the lie, the factoid, the fake news, the disinformation. that are the only substance of this story. What it is gossip, innuendo, and reputation destruction of a great institution, our glorious Catholic Church, which has raised the status of women to where it is today. From being non-persons in Roman Empire and most of the world, to being full participants in Christian cultures everywhere, especially Catholic Christian cultures. On Setting the Record Straight, this is Chuck Coughlin. Let us thank God for his gift to us of our glorious Catholic Church.
Introducing the redesigned CatholicSingles.com, featuring new ways that put the spotlight on the person and their faith, not just a profile picture. For the past 20 years, faithful Catholics have used CatholicSingles.com, and the reimagined CatholicSingles.com website is ready to help single Catholics take the next step in sharing meaningful relationships with other faithful Catholics. Remember, CatholicSingles.com, for faith, fellowship, and love.